Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
And good morning, good morning, good morning. This is your host, Dr. Terry Mason, the doctor in the house, in the house. And it's always a pleasure to be with you every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. where we have these wonderful conversations. Today, because it is the first Sunday of the month, this is the University of Illinois Health Cancer Day. So the Cancer Center at the University of Illinois is always now taking, has been for some time now, but way back to the time when Dr. Wynn was there, having a wonderful show on the first Sunday talking about cancer. And this one's going to be no exception. We're going to have a great conversation. And we have our guest on from the University of Illinois Cancer Center. Would you like to introduce yourself? Go right ahead.
Yes. Hi. This is Dr. Kareen Tawaji. I'm assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois Cancer Center, where I predominantly see patients with prostate cancer, bladder cancer, as well as kidney cancer and testicular cancer. And I'm focused on medical education as well. And I'm glad to be here today. Thank you.
Well, this is wonderful because we don't get a chance to talk about these cancers very much. So I'd like to begin because a lot of people may not know that such cancers exist, that you can have a cancer of your bladder or these genital urinary cancers. So let's just start with just an overview of the kinds of cancers that you see. And then we're going to move into what if there are any things that can help predispose somebody to these cancers. So why don't we start with we're talking about basically genital urinary cancers. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So yes, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah. So you can have cancer, of the prostate most commonly, obviously in men, and there's a variety of stages that can present, but for a lot of men, they can live with their prostate cancer. It can be something that's slow growing, but in some cases it can be aggressive. And that's why we encourage all men over the age of 45 or 50, depending on what risk factors you might have, to discuss screening for a blood test called the prostate specific antigen in the blood to see if you might be at risk for prostate cancer. And
that's the PSA for short, right?
Yes, exactly, the PSA. So especially for Black men that may have a family history of prostate cancer or have a higher predisposition of being at risk for prostate cancer, we definitely recommend that men have the discussion with their primary care doctors or their urologists about having just a simple blood test check to see if they may be at risk for prostate cancer.
Well, as a retired urologist, and I saw many, 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 many men with this issue, do we have any idea of what are some of the factors that may increase someone's risks, or are there modifiable factors, things that we can do something about that may lessen their risk for these cancers?
So for prostate cancer, we know that up to 15 to 20% do have a familial component, meaning something that runs in the family that you may have been born with that predisposes you to prostate cancer. So that is one factor, and that's why we definitely recommend that patients do get checked for that blood test for prostate cancer. Otherwise, in terms of modifiable risks for prostate cancer, there aren't that many modifiable risks. We know, and I think we'll dive a bit more into bladder cancer as well, and maybe we can talk briefly about kidney cancer, but for a lot of these cancers, there aren't that many modifiable risks. For bladder cancer, smoking is a huge modifiable risk factor, and so we always recommend that if there is a history of smoking, we provide resources to stop smoking, because in terms of something that you can modify in terms of your risk of getting bladder cancer specifically, smoking is a huge risk. And we know that there are also environmental factors that can contribute specifically to bladder cancer in terms of exposure to different dyes, if you're working in a manufactory where there might be a dye exposure or other chemicals. And so that also comes down to social determinants of health and, you know, in terms of where patients are born, what access they have to different jobs, what their environment is, and what may contribute to them being at a higher risk of cancer. In general, though, a lot of cancer is, you know, in the simplest of terms, bad luck, where we know that there's a mutation that happens and it just keeps growing and it's making more cells and it becomes a cancer. And so we definitely encourage patients to A, stop smoking, B, get screened for cancers that you can get screened for that you might be at higher risk for, and C, in general, maintain a healthy lifestyle in terms of diet and exercise so that if you were to get cancer, you have the best chance of getting the best treatments and being able to tolerate the treatment.
Well, can we talk just a bit about the role that inflammation plays in cancer? We know now that we're looking at many, many things that, and as I should say, I have a bias, and you should know it, around food. And looking at food, not necessarily, but inflammation as it relates to the things that we eat, is there, because we see that there is an inflammatory response that may or may not be relative to this. Could you comment a bit on that?
Yes. So we know in general that inflammation does play a role in cancer. There's not a clear cut, you know, there's one specific diet or one type of inflammation that increases the risk of any one cancer. Many cancers develop in different ways. But in general, we know that there are factors, for example, there are types of bladder cancer where if you have a lot of inflammation from having a Foley catheter or something to drain the urine over time, it leads to inflammation in the bladder, which predisposes those patients to have a higher risk of bladder cancer. So there certainly are a lot of different ways that inflammation, both in the way that you live your lifestyle and in certain specific factors that certainly increase the risk for different types of cancer.
Well, this has been interesting because lately I've been doing a lot of looking at the role that inflammation has, not just in cancer, but in atherosclerosis and other processes. And unfortunately, there are some ties to what we've been eating, particularly in the area of processed foods, that seem to suggest that there may be, and even in some of our meat supplies, in terms of those that have been, where they've been subject, the animals have been subject to hormonal manipulation. I know you may not have been prepared to answer that question, but just if you have heard or gleaned anything from this, and I should tell you up front that I have a bias. I'm always going to be always honest with my biases. I really do believe, based on just looking at what we call cardiovascular disease and its role that what we eat plays in making that worse. And part of that is because of the inflammatory process that many of these foods that we're eating today and things that we're drinking today do incite a level of inflammation that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have sores or in your mouth or anything like that, but over time it does create these problems. So could you comment a bit about how the role of any inflammation and its role to changing the character of the cells in our body, even if it's from, you know, there are a lot of things for bladder cancer that we used to talk about, the different dyes and things that you just mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we know that, you know, inflammation over time can damage the body's healthy cells and weaken the immune system. And we know that a weakened immune system can increase the risk of certain types of cancer. And so although, you know, not all types of inflammation are bad, sometimes we have inflammation that helps fight off different things in our body that are necessary. But in general, if you have chronic inflammation, so inflammation over time, that can be due to obesity, smoking, stress. It can be from diet choices, lack of exercises, even exposure to secondhand smoke. And so it is really important for anyone that wants to decrease the risk of inflammation to make healthier choices. And so we know that, you know, there's not specifically one diet that has been shown to decrease the risk of cancer, but in general, we advocate for patients to try to have more of a plant-based diet that might reduce inflammation or have anti-inflammatory properties. So eating, you know, at least 2/3 of the plate filled with more fruits and vegetables kind of thing, and then limiting processed foods like you mentioned. We know that processed foods are lower in nutrients, higher in things like refined sugars, flours, unhealthy fats, and certain processed foods too, you know, that are like red meat and things like that can increase the risk of certain types of cancers. And so whenever possible, you know, making those healthier choices can overall potentially reduce the risk of cancer.
There are a number of things that, you know, one scene, and I have to tell you, again, I've been in a few of these movies talking about this, and this has been something I've been looking at for some time. And just changing, just making these small dietary changes to increase the amount of fruits and vegetables, I mean, just the role of fruits, vegetables, and water as it relates to constipation. We have a society that spends tens of millions of dollars every year on constipation. Going into any of our drug stores, you can see in some of them a whole wall of medications for constipation. So is there a role in things like constipation? Obviously, there's a role with food, but is there a role with inflammation as a result of chronic constipation that might be an issue?
So there isn't anything that I'm aware of specifically with constipation in of itself increasing the risk of cancer. We know that if you have inflammation of your bowels over time, like if you have something called Crohn's disease or inflammation, that can predispose you to having a higher risk of colon cancer, for example. You know, constipation can be a manifestation of cancer, as in one of the presenting symptoms of certain types of cancer, including colon cancer. But I'm not aware of any correlation specifically with constipation and certain cancers. But that being said, I think, you know, having a healthy diet, having regular bowel movements, we actually know that increased fiber could potentially help with certain types of decreasing the rate of certain cancer types. And also we know that there are studies right now looking at increasing fiber, which technically should decrease constipation, helping in terms of patients doing better on different types of cancer treatments once they have cancer.
Well, this is fascinating. And in terms of urological cancer, that is cancers of the urinary tract, what are, if there are any, that you can give to the audience, things that increase your risk for urinary cancers? And you can talk about those, whether they wherever that may be. What are those risk factors, including smoking, may increase risk for those diseases?
So I guess I can talk about bladder cancer first. So in terms of bladder cancer, we know that the number one modifiable risk factor is smoking. And then there are certain environmental exposures. So if you're, you know, exposed to certain factories where you have a lot of access to chemicals and dyes and things like that, we know that those people are at higher risk of bladder cancer. We also know that there are certain social determinants of health, so aspects of life in the environment where someone was born, where they live, where they work, you know, really determines potentially what risk of different cancers, such as bladder cancer, they might have. We know that, for example, for bladder cancer, African-American patients have lower survival rates and present at a later stage of the disease when compared to white patients, and that might be partly explained by smoking, occupational exposures, but also with these social determinants of health. And that also comes down to access to the best treatments that we have, and the treatment of bladder cancer has changed a lot in the last few years, and it's continuously, you know, becoming better in terms of how long patients can live. But we really want to make sure that we're not perpetuating disparities in terms of treatment so that there's equal access so that we can eliminate some of these survival differences that we're seeing in bladder cancer specifically.
And bladder cancer is one of those things that doesn't necessarily, because I always like to make sure our audience is clear, that you don't always get, and rarely do you actually get, a symptom of almost any disease in its earliest, most curable form. And can you just talk about that briefly as we walk through our digestive systems and our urinary systems? Because everybody thinks you've got to have some pain, you got to be pain-free and you don't see any bleeding or anything like that, that you're home free. But not necessarily. So you want to talk a little bit about what we can do to try to make certain that if we do end up with one of these cancers, how do you find out as early as possible? What do you do?
Yes. So going back to basics, if you think about the bladder as it's a balloon-shaped organ that stores urine, and so a lot of times when someone has bladder cancer, at the earliest stage, it might just be in, if you think of this balloon, which is the bladder, as having three layers. The bladder cancer often starts in that inner layer. And so that is the earliest stage of bladder cancer that you can have. And so, you know, when people start to have symptoms, sometimes it can be symptoms similar to a urinary tract infection. So wanting to urinate frequently, having discomfort in urination, difficulty urinating. At the earliest stages, too, you can sometimes see small amounts of blood in the urine. But to your point, a lot of times there might not be a lot of symptoms initially. And so when there are those kind of symptoms, it is important to talk to your doctor so that they could potentially do a urine test and look, you know, especially if you're, it's more common in men, specifically over the age of 50, it tends to be a disease that happens in older people. And so any kind of symptoms like blood in the urine, peeing frequently, having difficulty in urination, things like that can be a reason for people to talk to their doctor to be maybe screened for these urinary cancers.
Well, the good news about especially some of the genital urinary cancers, the technology has changed so much since I was in practice, but it's easier now because one can actually look inside the bladder and actually see these very small cancers, which may not be producing not even that much blood or pain. So there's a way to look. If there is a test that you take, a urine test, and there's blood in that test, then one should be referred to the appropriate physician, usually a urologist, to look further. Because like I said, it's very simple, and you can do this right in the office. It doesn't require anesthesia or anything like that. And you could take a look in and see if there are bladder tumors, a tumor or tumors present. So this is what's really, really happening. And I know that the UI Health is going to be putting on an event coming up soon for people. Let's talk a bit about that event and why it's doing it.
So we're doing an event with regards to, you know, UI Health does a lot of work in terms of healthcare disparities, and so we know that the treatment landscape for patients with cancer, and I can speak specifically, you know, to bladder and prostate cancer, a lot of times these new treatments are approved based on primarily Caucasian patients. And so at UI Health, we're really dedicated on every level to enroll patients in clinical trials, which are these treatments that are changing the landscape of how people have, or different treatments that patients might have. And so we do have an event, I believe it's in June, kind of with an overview of all the different cancer types in terms of our healthcare disparities work, and really at every level of the institution, we're dedicated to that and really committed to increasing diversity in clinical trials that are changing the landscape of patients with cancer.
Now, people have questions, more questions after this program about their concern about any of these cancers that we talked about, or they may or may not have seen blood in their urine or things of that nature. What should they do? Who should they call?
So they should call their family doctor first to have the initial discussion about what kind of symptoms might be concerning them. And, you know, if they are a male over the age of 45, they could have the discussion about prostate cancer screening as well. But yes, with any of these symptoms, I think usually the first step is talking to your family doctor. And if you don't have a family doctor, looking at local clinics that might be able to take new patients to have that discussion. I think it's important for everyone to try to have kind of a primary care doctor who ends up being kind of the quarterback of all of your healthcare. And then if there are symptoms that are concerning enough, they could refer you to a urologist, like you said, to either do a urine test or look into the bladder with a small camera to see if there's anything of concern, to check that PSA, that prostate level in the blood, to see if there is a concern for prostate cancer, and be referred for further tests or scans if necessary, depending on the concern.
And if they don't have a primary care doctor, let's say they don't have one, I know most everybody should have today, but is it possible to get a primary care doctor at UI Health?
Yes, absolutely. We have a clinic, one of our main clinics is at Miles Square, right in the Medical Mile District. And so where UI Health is located, and as you know, generally it's pretty quick to get a primary care doctor there. I've been able to get patients in within a week or two usually.
Is there a number people could call for if they wanted to make an appointment? How does that work?
There is a number. So the Miles Square Health Center, I'll get the phone number for you. The main location, you could call 312-996-2000. But they have multiple locations as well.
Yes, and that's one of the great things about UI Health. They do have these clinics in diverse communities throughout the entire Chicagoland area. So let's give that number again. So if people do not have a primary care, everyone should have their primary care physician, because that's the way you get to your specialist. You get to your specialist by way of your primary care doctor. So let's give them that number again, that 312 number.
Yes, so 312-996-2000.
That's 312-996-2000. So if you don't have a physician, you could call that number, make an appointment to get a physician, because just because you feel good doesn't mean everything is okay. And a lot of these things don't have any symptoms at all in its earliest, most curable stage. So that's why we want to make sure that, you know, we don't guess, get a test. That's why I used to tell people, don't guess, get a test. And because of the level of processed foods that are consumed in a lot of the communities around the Chicagoland area, these processed foods are also risk factors for these kinds of problems. So let's talk about those foods and those prep the way they're prepared. Is there a relationship between that and developing risk factors for these kinds of cancers that we just talked about? Obviously, cigarette smoking is one, but in terms of food.
Yeah, so we know that certain processed meats, like certain types of deli meats, bacon, sausage, hot dogs, pepperoni, do increase the risk of certain types of cancer, specifically stomach cancer, traditionally is one of the ones that's most often linked to those kind of foods. We know that, kind of like we talked about, really highly processed foods, so, you know, pastries, sweets, drinks with a lot of sugar in them. So beware, you know, when you, sometimes people forget when they're ordering like a coffee, how much sugar can actually be in those coffees, even though they're trying to limit sugar in other parts of their diet. And so a lot of those sugars can increase the risk of, or can increase inflammation in the body that can predispose to different types of cancer. Sodas or pops, any kind of packaged or instant foods. I often tell patients, you know, when you think about the grocery store, all of the middle aisles tend to have a lot of the processed foods. And then if you're in the perimeter, that's usually where you have more of like the fruits, the vegetables, other kinds of proteins. I think one other easy way to make some healthy changes in the diet is to try and bake things rather than fry them. And, you know, of course, there's a role for everything in moderation. You know, people have to live their life, and, you know, I would never discourage someone, for example, on a celebration to have cake or ice cream or whatever is their guilty pleasure. But I think in general, if you can make healthy choices in terms of eliminating red meats, these processed foods, you know, 80% of the time, then that will make a big difference, not only in terms of your cancer risk, but in terms of your cardiac risk, risk of heart attack, risk of stroke, risk of high blood pressure, diabetes, all of that, which in general, you know, sometimes, like we said, cancer is truly just bad luck. So I think do everything that's within your control to be as healthy as possible. Stay on top of your cancer screening for the cancers that do have screening that's available, and have a primary care doctor to discuss those. And then, you know, ultimately for patients that end up having cancer, then we're in the best situation in terms of offering them the strongest treatment that we have.
You know, and these are such wonderful pearls that we're putting out for people to understand, because people have to understand there is a relationship between the things you eat and the diseases that you have. And just to underscore one of the points you made, the International Research on Cancer, the IARC, International Association of Research on Cancer, come out and made a declaration that, you know, we really do need to look at these processed meats, because they talk about just one hot dog, whatever that is. I mean, because that's a highly processed piece of meat, and oftentimes you don't know what's in it. So these things can be also things that create these kinds of inflammation. And in their data, they said that one hot dog or four strips of bacon increase your colorectal cancer risk by 18%. So I think that's significant. I think that's significant, mm-hmm. And we need to, because we have so many people, and, you know, and I would imagine that in the same realm as hot dogs would be Polish sausages and all kinds of other processed meats. Bacon, as you've already indicated, are these processed meats. And the process of processing the meat is what creates the problem. So these and the genital urinary cancers, because a lot of times we don't think about those that much. We don't think about, we think about prostate, but, you know, bladder cancer is still alive and well. And you can talk a bit more about the other kinds of genital urinary cancers that are out there. And we talked with one of the people from, I think, Mount Square before, about the role of HPV and Gardasil, because maybe we could re-bring that back to the surface, because I think that's also very timely.
Oh, absolutely. So I think I can, so just in terms of the urinary cancers, we talked about prostate cancer. I think just getting back to if you're a male over the age of 45, talk to your doctor about getting a blood test in that's called PSA, prostate-specific antigen, that can screen for prostate cancer. The other types of urinary cancer, so bladder cancer, and then the other one is kidney cancer, you know, don't have any screening tests, so it's important to notice things like blood in the urine or issues or changes in terms of how you're urinating. If you think of the kidneys are a pair of organs higher up from the bladder that help filter, you know, waste and water and electrolytes in your body, and occasionally you can get cancer in those organs as well. We talked about some of the symptoms specifically for bladder cancer. For testicular cancer, it's important for, especially for younger men, so it tends to be a type of cancer that affects men, you know, late teens to early 30s. It's important to do self-exams for testicular exams. So if you notice a hard lump in the testicle, usually it's a non-painful, so painless lump. That would be a reason to talk to your doctor and have further investigations. But in terms of other cancers, we know that for women, they should have mammograms, depending on their risk factors, sometimes starting at the age of 40, to screen for breast cancer. Like you alluded to, it's always better to screen and find these cancers earlier because the treatment tends to be a lot easier, less involved, and have a much higher chance of cure if you find a cancer early. And I know a lot of times people are worried to go to their doctor if they think that they might have cancer because they're too scared to maybe be told that they have cancer. But the sooner you go, the sooner maybe you could find something at an earlier stage where the treatment will be easier and you have a higher chance of cure. I think getting back to HPV, we know that there are different cancers that are at risk with, that are associated with HPV, which is a type of virus that a lot of people carry, and it increases the risk of cervical cancer as well as different types of oral cancers of the mouth. And so it's really important to have this vaccine if you are eligible. So most people under the age of 46 can be eligible for this HPV vaccine, which is another thing specifically for especially people before initiation of sexual activity, but you can do it anytime and it still decreases the risk of these types of cancer. That's extremely important. And the other big one that we screen for is colon cancer. So talking to your doctor about either a stool test or a colonoscopy in terms of what you might be at risk for.
One of the other things I'd like to sort of make sure that we drive home is that usually, and I used to tell my patients this, there are no symptoms of any disease in its earliest, usually its most curable form. So you yes. just need to get your screening test to see, because you might not know that there's blood in the urine. And the only way you mm-hmm. can find out is that if you go and get a urine analysis, which will be part of your regular routine evaluation, that may pick up blood that you can't see. And the same thing could be true for the stool. So it's important, and if you have a question out there and you want to get a question and answer, you can call us right here at the radio. The number is 773-591-1690. That's 773-591-1690. And we'd like to get you on the air. So let's go ahead and take a call. A caller, you're on the air with your question. Go right ahead.
You got me, brother?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Thanks for taking my call, but don't call me sir. I work for a living. Look, healthcare in a capitalist society can at times be very, very tricky. You can easily be a cash cow, and you don't know when or how. I went. My primary doctor sent me to a prostate doctor because I told him I had a little dribbling at the end of my urine. He said, "Oh Lord, oh Father God, I'm gonna have to send you to see the urologist." Oh, he sent me to see this urologist. This urologist got this long white coat on, all starred. He didn't even touch me. He said, "Hey, man." He said, "Oh, we want to take you to surgery." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, we got to see what's going on up there." I said, "What?" Man, I didn't know that the dribbling came with my age.
Well, I think there are a number of factors that you got to look at when you're looking at this. I can't comment on it because I don't have the details of your situation, nor do I, and I don't practice anymore, so I don't even have a way to see. I have a way to see you, but I think that if at any time you're dissatisfied or don't understand what a physician is saying, it's always open to get another opinion based on what your insurance would allow. So I would always advise that. We'll take our next caller. You're on the air with your question. Go right ahead.
Hey, assalamu alaikum, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. And to your guest, this is very complicated from the perspective, especially when you're dealing with the black community and black family. And we got to put some black family values together, because the way that we are expecting people to eat, it is almost impossible due to what people have been taught and what is available in your area. In most cases, because they do have DoorDash and all these different things now we don't have to worry about food deserts as much. But it's about training. So if we don't get to any family value systems, but this is a part of your family value system, it's going to be extremely difficult. And the last point I would like to make, I think we would solve over 80% of our problems in the black community, just specifically speaking, if we would leave drugs and alcohol, exercise a bit, and change our eating habits just a bit, we'll be fine. But if you add drugs and alcohol, bad eating, and don't exercise, then you add stress, then you got a bomb. So if we took away drugs and alcohol and exercise, do you know how healthy our community would be if we took those two things out?
I hear your point. I would add taking smoking away, from putting smoking in that list, because that does creates big problems in our communities as well. But the thing that we're talking about is doing something about the things you can do something about. So you can do something about the things that you put in your mouth. You can do something about the choices that you make most of the time. Let's go ahead to our next caller, because I want to try and get everybody in. Caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
First of all, good morning, Dr. Mason, and especially to your guests. I would respectfully say to your guests, ma'am, please disregard the opening comments that you have heard. I love my brother James. I love my brother Art. But you see, this is a moment in time, Dr. Mason, for truth and disinformation. I thank you, Dr. Mason, for being insightful, for being an individual that Melody Spann Cooper have chosen to be on the airways. Your analysis, your insightfulness, your information that you bring to us that we might be better. I salute the Weiss Memorial Hospital resident in the psych ward, because they taught me, and I'm telling the people as I get off of the air, mental health equals physical health. And to your guests, let me show you how serious this is, ma'am. The only ethnicity in America that is being told not to vote, the only ethnicity in America that's walking around here after there has been a clear takeover of the federal government, it doesn't matter who it was, what they were doing or whatever, it's just, it happened.
I want to keep our topic, I want to keep the topic to what we're talking about. I really do, because we're going to run out of town and out time, and I want to make sure I don't have time for this kind of conversation, though I hear what you're saying, but I want to try and keep the conversation to the things that our guest has expertise in, and we can ask her questions about the things that we can do something about. And if we don't have a primary care doctor, to go get one. And if we don't have a way to get the test, how you can get them. So that's what I really want to make sure, that we get a test, that we get time to have time. Because I can't solve the problems of the world on the radio, and I can't even listen to most of them. So I just want to do what I can in making sure that we open up things where people can go, like Miles Square. And I thank Congressman Danny Davis and others who made sure that there was funding to keep these federally qualified health centers open and moving. So we'll take our next caller. Next caller, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yes. With the comment for our guest. I thank you for having the doctor on there, and I thank the doctor for being there and doing such a good job. And I have to say that I am starting up this year already a patient of Miles Square, and I have gotten some pretty good service there. And I'm looking forward to continue to get some evaluations and some service there. I have a question and a request. My question is this. What is it that you can tell us, other than about the smoking and the other things that you've just mentioned, about prevention? And the reason I'm asking this, which is related to the request, the statistics that says one out of two Americans will have cancer in a lifetime. That's for male and female now. It used to be different. So that means 50% of the people will definitely have cancer in their lifetime. So I think that should be looked at, and I'm requesting about prevention. What more an emphasis can be and research can be done on prevention?
Well, we've been talking about that, and I'll let our guests get, while we still have some time, go back to talking about prevention. And then I have things that I've been doing, and that's why we have our own farm right now, because we want to make certain that we're getting food that's free of organophosphate, pesticides, and things of that nature. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But I'm going to let our guests go ahead and respond to your question about prevention. Go right ahead, Doctor.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad that you are plugged into Miles Square and have had a positive experience so far. I think, you know, talking to your doctor there about what you can do for cancer prevention. So to your point, you're right. One in two Americans will have cancer in their lifetime. So, you know, going back to eating as healthy of a diet as possible, you know, limiting processed foods, trying to exercise, you know, even a brisk walk, 30 minutes, five times a week, that's a great starting point. Especially as the weather is getting nicer, going for walks, getting some exercise is really important. Limiting alcohol. You know, they say in general, if you can limit to one or two drinks, I think for men, they recommend, you know, under 10 a week, but one or two in a sitting max as a maximum amount. And then talking to your Miles Square doctor, depending on your age, about whether you qualify for a colonoscopy or a stool test, whether you qualify for that blood test to screen for prostate cancer, and having the discussion in terms of what other, you know, medical conditions you have that could potentially increase your cancer risk, and trying to manage those is also extremely important.
And you can find that out. If they don't have a primary care doctor, they can come to Miles Square and get a primary care doctor. Is that correct?
Correct.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Oh, yes, correct.
Yeah, I think that that's what we want to make sure people are aware of, because there's all kinds of disinformation or bad information that's out there. I've told my story on the radio many times that I was the guy who was eating the kind of way that we shouldn't be eating. I was eating, oh my God, I can't tell you. I was eating so much steak and pizza and all that kind of stuff. And that bought me, because it personally, we got to understand, just because you don't feel bad doesn't mean bad things aren't happening. So I was eating pizza and I was eating steaks. I ate a steak every day, every single day, 7 days a week. And I used to get them cut and eat and cook them. And what happened was I ended up I was walking on a treadmill and I got chest pain. Now, I just want people to know the one thing that you got to understand for even some of the kinds, and I'll ask the doctor to comment, that the absence of symptoms doesn't always mean the absence of disease. So you need to understand that that's why we test, don't guess. And that's why we do the things at certain intervals, and I have the doctor talk more about that, to help us find those things out. And so, yes, because sometimes the first symptom you may have of a bad disease is death. So you need to find out before then, and I'm going to let the doctor comment at this point. Go right ahead, doctor.
No, absolutely. You know, even high blood pressure is often referred to as the silent killer, because to your point, you may have no symptoms of having a very high blood pressure, and you might not have any symptoms until you end up having a stroke or having a heart attack or having heart failure, which can be debilitating and lead to a lot of issues down the line. So I think talking to your doctor, having your blood pressure checked, because some people, even if they're healthy, are at risk of high blood pressure, and managing it and avoiding those other issues down the line is extremely important. So that is why, even without symptoms, we advocate for people to have a primary care doctor, have their blood work checked, have their blood pressure checked, because you can have no symptoms and be dealing with something, including some types of cancer, with absolutely no symptoms.
And let's not forget the other thing, high blood pressure. We see the combination of high blood pressure and diabetes destroys your kidneys and other things too. And we talk about all these units that we see in our community, these dialysis centers that are out in the African-American community. They're there because they got people with renal failure. And the renal failure, and I'm going to tell you, your kidneys can fail and you could feel just fine. So, especially early on. So the only way you can tell whether or not something's going on with your kidneys, if you don't have some place to go, you can always go to one of the Miles Square Health Centers. But you need to get your blood pressure checked, because you cannot tell that your blood pressure is over by how you feel. Don't do that. That's why they make devices for measuring the blood pressure, because then you can get an accurate reading of what your blood pressure is. So, Doc, could you talk just a bit about these silent diseases like high blood pressure and even things like diabetes and things of that nature? And the combination of diabetes and high blood pressure, and what that does to your kidney.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, high blood pressure, often people will have no symptoms whatsoever. Your blood pressure can be high. Generally, we advocate for the blood pressure to be under 130 over 80 if possible. And so if the blood pressure is over those targets, there might initially be some recommendations in terms of limiting salt intake, not adding salt to foods, avoiding, you know, chips and other things that might carry a lot of salt, looking at different cans of food in terms of the amount of salt that they contain is really important. In terms of diabetes, we know that a lot of those sugary foods that are in the diet, you know, over time leading to obesity, can increase the risk of diabetes. And the combination of high blood pressure and diabetes, which often can have no symptoms whatsoever, can dramatically increase someone's risk of having a heart attack, which in the worst case scenario can be fatal, increase someone's risk of stroke, which can be debilitating and leave someone paralyzed, can also increase the risk of kidney failure and lead to dialysis, which in of itself is life-changing. So there's a lot of modifiable things in terms of those kind of conditions that can be done in terms of screening early for high blood pressure, for diabetes, and talking to your doctor about those.
Do we have any other callers? Let's see if we have any callers. I don't want to make sure I give everybody a chance to call them, a chance to get their question answered. Do we have another caller? Hello? Hello? Oh, I don't know who that is. But
hello.
So we
hello.
Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
Hi.
First of all,
I want to say that this is Smoking Joe. Let me just say this show is one of the most important shows on the radio that you can listen to, because it's telling you how to eat to live, and that's important, because when we put things in our mouth, we're either eating to live or we're eating to die. It's one of the two. Is it giving you life? Is it promoting health? Healthy nutrition, or is it not? And one of the first things we need to talk about is some basics, like not eating processed foods, your chips, Doritos. There's a lot of anything that didn't come out the ground that's in these stores prepackaged. I don't care if they're chicken nuggets or chicken patties or fish patties, cookies, chips, all this stuff that I see people in their shopping carts that they're purchasing quickly so they can pop it in the microwave or the air fryer, et cetera, or your red meats or bacon, the deli meats that you're getting. These foods are highly cured in processed meats, and they tend to lead to all the diseases that you talked about here, kidney failure, heart disease, et cetera. And we love to eat these things. Many of us after church are going to sit down at a restaurant or go to some of our favorite fast food places. I won't name them because they might be sponsors, and eat these foods that are absolutely killing us. And so the other thing I want people to know is that before you put something in your mouth, please read the ingredients. Look at the packaging. Most of your foods you find in stores contain some form of sugar and sodium. I don't know why you want to put high fructose corn syrup in bread. I mean, I have no reason why. Not that bread is the most healthy thing to eat, but those things are loaded with high sodium and high sugar. Most of your chips like Doritos, they have a red number 5 and yellow and bromated vegetable oil, BHA. You'd have to be a chemist to figure out all of the side effects that these chemicals that you find in Skittles and different foods that they're now talking about banning, that are banned in Europe. We are killing ourselves by the food we're consuming because we have undisciplined taste buds, and we have lost the gift of being able to take food out the ground and make it edible.
Well, I think that many of us are still trying to do that. We're still trying to make sure that we do that and provide an opportunity for people who want to get fresh foods right out of the ground with our, and I'll talk more about that next week because we'll have a lot more time. But it is where you can actually buy a share in what's called a community-sponsored agriculture. And that, what that does is allows you to get a chance to get the food that you were talking about that right now. And like I said, next Sunday I'm going to spend pretty much the whole Sunday talking about that. But this Sunday is the University of Illinois Cancer Center Sunday. UI Health Cancer Center. We want to make sure that we get that information out so people know. And I want you to know that Miles Square is a great, great federally qualified health center. And this is what we... If you don't have a doctor's place to go, you can always go through a Miles Square.
That's Miles Square.
No, that ain't that. Okay. Write it down. So I want to make sure we get that time out. But I thank everybody for calling. And we're going to talk a lot more about these. Any last closing comments, doctor, before you leave? Because we're running out of time.
No, I think just getting back to the point that a lot of times you cannot have symptoms if you have cancer or other conditions. So having a primary care doctor is the first step to identifying, you know, what we can find early when it comes to cancer as well as other conditions.
Well, that's important. Very, very important. I want you all to take heed to that because we need to make sure. And I'm going to be talking a lot more about the farm and how you can access the farm, the opportunity to get the foods that are now being grown without pesticides, without those things that we know are dangerous. So we just want you to know that that's what you can do. And I want to give you that number one more time just before we go because we're out of time because we've got to go to – and that number is
312-996-2000. Oh, yeah.
Okay, 312-996-2000. That's for Miles Square. And for the food is 872-904-8751. And we'll talk more about that next week. Thank you so much from the University of Illinois. This has been a great program. And the next voice you're going to hear is that of Ms. Pam Morris-Walton, who's coming to make a joyful noise over the radio. And until next week at this same time and station, may God continue to bless each and every one of you with continued health and strength. And thank the University of Illinois Cancer, University UI Health. I want to make sure I'm providing great guests today and so that we can get that information. And again, the number for Miles Square is, what is that number? Go right ahead.
312-996-2000.
312-996-2000. See you next week at same time and station.
Thank you.
Continue to be blessed. Thank you so much.